Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is another Kickstarter Wednesday Spotlight, and today we're going to be talking about the second issue of a self-published creator-owned book. So it's my pleasure to welcome back Trevor from Dark Knight Nation. A lot of you regular listeners of the podcast will recognize his voice and recognize his face because obviously he joins me for Future State Fridays every week, and he's here to talk about his own book, the second issue. The campaign has started, and you know, he critiques books on the internet, but the great thing about Trevor is he puts his money where his mouth is. He's creating his own books, and he invites your criticism. Please go pledge, check out his title, and give him feedback. You know, he can take it as well as dish it out. So, Trevor, why don't you let everybody know kind of what the overall series is about, and then specifically in issue two, what you're going to be tackling in terms of expanding on the story we got in issue one.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on, man. I appreciate you giving me the time of day and for letting me use your platform to talk about the book, man. It means a lot.
Yep.
Well, Area 51, the Helix Project, is overall a series that dives deep into the bounds of Area 51, where the test subjects of the Helix Project are housed, which is a military-based operation that uses surgically grafted DNA and cellular transplants from extraterrestrial beings. And they basically surgically graft those to soldiers in order to develop, well, you guessed it, super soldiers. So it's a very sort of different take on the super soldier trope that I think is really interesting and has a lot of really different complications to it, especially because this is all sort of set in the backdrop of the United States, kind of under the shadow of the Cold War. And it was a very sort of tumultuous time for our people, for the world. And nobody really knew who was going to pull the trigger first. And they were constantly looking for ways to put an end to it. And so with the sort of inception of like genetics being big now and biological weapons kind of having their heyday in the mid-2000s, I was like, why not do something like this? You know, let's kind of approach that ground, kick it up to 11, and turn it into a super personal story, right? Like one that's about identity and mental health and the idea that I think a lot of us can relate to in living in service of a memory to somebody as opposed to who they might be now. So issue two is, man, it hits the ground running. For those of you that didn't read issue one, my intent was to do a lot of emotional and contextual setup so that you know the character, you know the world, you feel a connection to them. And issue two, I am basically just going to break your balls and your heart because we do not stop. My, I guess, central idea was that you won't care about the plot if you don't care about the character or his world or know about him. And so, you know, at this point, we're ready to really break loose on some plot, kind of give you some nuggets about what the Helix Project is, who is behind it, and why it might be in some pretty dangerous hands.
Yeah, and you know, you're talking earlier about genetics and all that, and that I want you to kind of touch on this because what's cool about it is you actually have a background, right? Like you're bringing some real scientific real world knowledge to this kind of thing, and that's kind of what sparked the interest to go this direction, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So I studied molecular and cellular biology at the University of Connecticut for 3 years before I realized I wanted to be a writer. Obviously there's so much out there that tells you not to go into a more artistic career. And I actually went to a STEM high school, so I was kind of geared towards that direction. But my focus was on molecular genetics. And so when it came time for me to write a story, I felt honestly kind of troubled because I'm young. I don't have a lot of life experience. And they always say to write what you know. And, you know, at the ripe old age of, at the time, I guess, 21, 22, I didn't know much. So I was like, let's tell a story where I can really throw myself into it and therefore hopefully make a better book and make something that has an edge to it and do science fiction in a way that isn't preposterous. You know, that's a big thing for me. I hate when like, and it could be my background, but I hate when science fiction is just like blanketly obviously wrong, right? Like the goal of sci-fi and fantasy and those types of genres are to suspend your disbelief. So if I'm not making it sound legitimate at bare minimum and making you think that this could be a thing, at least in this isolated incident, then I'm doing my job wrong.
Yeah, and we talked a little bit about the first issue because you took an approach of, and I know first issues are so challenging to write, and we'll talk about if issue two was any easier, but it's so tough, right? Like, you've got to introduce the characters, you've got to introduce the narrative. You try to introduce the world, but you know, space is limited, and what's the hook that's going to get people coming back for an issue two? And the added part of that, and this is the one thing that I dislike about Kickstarter, and I support, like, in 2020, I supported more Kickstarters probably than I had all previous years combined. Like, there was a lot of good stuff out there, and you know, to a lot of people's point of you know, Boom Studios doing Berserker and Scott Snyder doing Nocterra and a bunch of other, there were more eyes on it. I was more aware. I knew several creators that were kind of hurting for work because pencils down. So I paid a lot more attention. I was able to support a lot more work, and I think that's great. I think it's a great way to do it. But the one thing I don't like about Kickstarter is, because it's the onus to do everything is on the creator. And we talked about that last time you were on, you know, shipping and ordering and paperweight and dealing with the printer and like everything. There's no infrastructure. There's nobody who, you know, once you've done it once, then yeah, you get it under your belt and you know better for the next time. But when you're talking about a publisher, even a small publisher, like an Aftershock or something like that, they have somebody working for them that knows this stuff, knows how to talk to printers, knows how to deal with international shipping if it's being printed in China or Canada or whatever. So there's already a leg up. When you do a Kickstarter, man, it's everything is on your own. You know, the pallet or whatever, the big shipment comes in, you have to divide it up, individually pack it, ship it out. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. So I'm not putting the blame on creators that a lot of times there's such a long space between issues. Mm-hmm. And that's why, like you told me, I'm getting ready for issue two already. I was like, hell yeah. Cause the one thing I don't like about Kickstarter is, especially if it's a book that hooks you, like your first issue did, it's like, man, now I got to wait 6 months for issue two, you know, and things just lose momentum and you forget about it and, you know, out of sight, out of mind and that kind of thing. But you really were able to turn it around a lot quicker. So, before we get into that part of it, let's kind of backtrack to what I was talking about at first. That first issue was such a challenge. How did you decide what's going to go in the first issue, what's going to go in the second issue, and was it a lot easier to script the second issue after you had that first one out of the way?
Yeah, absolutely. The first issue, you know, and I've talked to you behind closed doors many times about the sort of intent and making sure that I'm avoiding a lot of the pitfalls of first issues that I think a lot of pros that I admire, you know, guys that write circles around me tend to fall into. And that is these massive info dumps and exposition dumps. And you feel like, you know, you're being told things rather than being shown things. And that was very much not what I wanted to do. You know, I mean, I'm a very verbal guy. I talk a lot. Anybody that's heard me on Jace's podcast, I'll go off for 10 minutes by myself. I'm not shy about falling on my sword there. And I very much wanted to avoid that tendency, overall in making comics, but particularly in a first issue. Right. I wanted to make sure that in a visual medium like comic books, that you are interpreting the information visually, and that whatever I can add via monologue, dialogue, what have you, that it has to be important, that it has to be functional, and that it can't bore somebody. So issue one was a definite balancing act. And it also doesn't help that it was literally the first comic book I had ever written in my life. I had never done this before, right? So there was a lot of sort of anxiety that goes into that. With issue two, knowing what I started setting up in issue one, I definitely had a little bit more leeway. Now, the end of issue two is like a holy beep moment. And so that was a little bit more stressful for me to try to set up, deliver upon, because I needed it to have punch and I really wanted it to be effective. But I think generally, yeah, issue two was a little bit easier for me because I felt like I had a lot more space to work with. I felt like I had more control because I did so much of the setup and I think in a fairly efficient way in issue one, so that issue two, I now have full control of the pace, right? So if I want to surprise you, I have the time to surprise you. If I want to slow down, I can slow down. If I want to start sprinting without you even realizing it, I can. And so that freedom was definitely an alleviator for me on this second issue. I just think the general experience of having written a first issue, having a sort of idea logistically what that means on the back end for production and a number of different things, I felt a lot more ready this time around. And I think I was able to deliver something that takes everything that people liked about issue one, taking that, pumping that up to 11, and then bringing in that sort of higher energy that wasn't quite there in issue one because it was a little bit more set up and contextual, and make something that is what I think is significantly better than the first one, and will continue to get better until we come to a really dynamic close.
Yeah, we were talking a little bit before we started recording. It's not like your first one, you know, funded right away. You're on a better pace this time. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a situation where, okay, number one did gangbusters and that's allowing me to do a number two really quickly and turn it around again. This was something you had like planned out from the start, despite the overwhelming amount of work. You're committed to getting this out as quickly as you like logistically can, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like we talked about it on the last one too. Like I'm a fan, I'm a reader, I'm a consumer, and I know what pisses me off, you know, when I'm in that zone. So for me, as somebody who is putting out this stuff, and I want to make sure that the people that are taking the time to contribute to the book, pre-order it, purchase it, read it, promote it, whatever, that they're getting it in a relatively digestible amount of time. I mean, it's difficult enough to read basically a chapter of a book once a month without having to go back and reread constantly and remind yourself, or you read issue two and because you don't remember something, it's so disruptive. And so to the best of my ability, being a one-man army, I want to make sure that I'm getting you multiple issues a year, right? Like if all goes well, I want this book to be finished by the end of this year, you know, if I can. You know, it's not a promise, but I very much see that as a at least a very close possibility. And just as a creator, I want to create. I want to keep going. I want to create new things. I want to bring you guys new stories. I mean, like, you know, no hyperbole, I have another two series that are on the back burner right now, basically being pre-developed, that are totally different genres, totally different spaces. Like, you know, it's weird because I feel like I constantly have to toggle like the business logistical person and the creator, you know, on and off or back and forth. And so, you know, I'm really trying to make that balance a little bit easier to maintain. And to do that, you know, with all of the logistics that I have to worry about, I also create more. And the more that I write the Helix Project, the more the juice is flowing, and the more I come up with other crazy ideas. And I look forward to bringing that out and to putting that out for you guys to read and enjoy.
Any thought to when they come back to doing some cons and seeing if you can grow the audience that way?
Absolutely. I mean, that was like one of the biggest heartbreakers about being a new creator is not having conventions to go out and to meet people and to talk and to kind of like preach my gospel, I guess. You know what I mean? Like, it's so easy behind a computer screen for somebody to kind of look at something and go, like, I want to talk about it. I want to meet people. And like, as a totally sort of self-indulgent creator thing, I want to thank the people that came out and supported my book. Like, I know it might be taboo to say this now, but I want to shake your freaking hand. You know what I'm saying? I want to say thank you. And I can't do that. And that disconnect is a real bummer. So, you know, for this one, I tried to do things to make that access more available. You know, like certain tiers will get like one-on-one 30-minute Skype calls for people to ask me anything they want about the book, production, whatever, talk. I don't care. I just want to talk to people and hang out and, network. It's so, yeah, I'm sorely missing the con. experience, both as a fan and as a new creator. 100%. I mean, Jesus, Jace, I mean, you and I have been talking now for like a year and a half. I still haven't met you in person, which is like, it's such a bummer. Like, I want to sit down and have a drink with you and like spill the beans about issues 5 and 6 of the Helix Project. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it 100%. And yeah, I mean, there are things that you just can't do, you know, over a computer screen. And, you know, even talking about the book like this, as opposed to standing in front of somebody and, you know, flipping through the pages and going, okay, here's what I was thinking with this. And, you know, this character is that, you know, as opposed to, you know, somebody reading it on their own. And yeah, they're bringing their own experiences and they can be pulling stuff out of it, but it's a whole nother thing to, you know, be in the presence of the creator and see their passion for it. I mean, I have lifelong friends that I've made at conventions because, you know, their book pulled me in. I'm specifically thinking of the girls from Hex Comics. I mean, they're amazing. And it was, their book was like the gateway for our friendship. But in talking about the characters and kind of expanding on the cast of characters we met in the first issue, do you feel like writing the second issue, you have a better handle on them? Or did you feel like, man, I had it dialed in right from the beginning and now it's just basically putting words to paper? Or are they still kind of growing and evolving in your mind as a writer?
I think that for most writers, as you continue to put your character on the page, you're going to get to know them more. I don't think, and this could be ignorant because I haven't written, you know, 20 issues of the same characters, but I think that there's something that will always be fleshed out the more time you spend with these characters. I mean, I feel like if you're doing it right, you're constantly, these characters will take on a life of their own. And there are things about them that are going to be entirely independent of you. There was something that I ended up doing with military lingo, later on, that I did not have planned when I first outlined the series. 100% did not have planned. I wrote issue 1, I wrote issue 2, and I said, you know, I don't want to have a villain that is easy to hate. I don't. But I want him to be menacing and I want him to be scary and I want him to challenge things that we hold dear as people, as individuals, as a society. And I need him to challenge Kent. I need him to challenge Kent in a big, bad way. So, you know, and even Kent, like, I feel like I've definitely fleshed him out more. So I would be almost disappointed if by now I felt like these characters were immutable. You know, I like the idea that the more I write them, there are small things that I might be able to change that will resonate more with them, right? Because there's nothing worse than like character being changed for a plot. You know, I would way rather completely upend the conclusion of the story in order to better serve the characters. And that doesn't necessarily mean to give them a happy ending, but it needs to be the ending that is right for them. Right. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. 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 100%. What about, you know, without spoiling, is there anything or anything about issue 2 that is a big kind of story beat or a big reveal or just a big moment that, man, you can't wait to see what the reader reaction is? Anything that comes to mind?
So Kent will come face to face with the person that ruined his life for the first time since it happened. He will get answers. He will be forced to make a decision that will change him for forever. And no matter what that decision is, it will affect the rest of the story. It will affect Kent. It will affect his small family and the way that he looks at the world as a whole. And I know that's super vague. If you've read issue 1, you might get a little bit of a hint as to what's going on. And he's going to learn some stuff that is not easy to swallow.
All right. I can't wait to check it out. How was the reaction for issue 1? Like, did you have people reaching out and saying, yeah, really liked it. I was surprised how good it was, that kind of thing. Or did, was, I mean, were, was there anybody calling you out going, man, you rip apart these other comics and this wasn't that great. I don't know. Like, we haven't talked about that. If you had any negative feedback.
No, I've been very fortunate. You know, it seems like everybody has really enjoyed it. And it's so funny because as a, like a self-deprecating creative, there are things where people are like, oh, I love this part. And I'm like, oh, really? Because I hated it. I look back and I'm like, oh, I wish I was better when I wrote this. And I feel like that's like the constant struggle. And there's a part of me that kind of thinks that I hope I never look back on something and I don't kind of consider what I could have done better. But everybody's been really great about it. You know, I've had a couple of reviews from people on YouTube, on sort of more textual forums, and they've all been very, like, they've all been overwhelmingly positive. And I think what's been most satisfying for me as a first-time creator is seeing reviews that mention things that I was very deliberate in trying to do. You know, like there was a more recent review that somebody put out on Twitter where they were talking about suspense. And I'm like, that's great. Like, that's awesome. Because one of the big things for me was building an emotional suspense, right? Looking at these characters and thinking, man, you know, Kent is literally standing over the edge, right? And I want that to be something that ties somebody to him. I want somebody to look at him and think, you know, that's that, like, under, you know, regardless of this crazy sort of sci-fi package that I've wrapped it all up in, that Kent is a person, like that Kent is somebody that you might want to be friends with. Kent might be somebody that you hate. It doesn't matter. What matters to me is that you look at Kent as a person. You look at him as somebody who is human, who is fallible, and that you want to follow him, you know, and explore the world that he lives in, right? And honestly, I kind of foresee a couple issues in that there's going to be a sort of like surprise favorite character that a lot of people are going to sort of populate their reviews with, but only time will tell. But you know, if anybody that has read the first issue or reads the second issue and has anything to say, good, bad, whatever, I invite it. Like, especially, I mean, just in general, I think creators may sometimes become complacent later on in their career. And I never want to be complacent, whether I agree with you, disagree with you, whatever. I want to get impressions. I want to know what's working for people. I want to know what's not working for people. You know, I don't want to be writing issue 6 of the series only to realize that, you know, there were 50 readers of issue 2 that had no idea what I was setting up for 6 and have something be totally non-impactful. So don't be shy. I mean, you know, I ask that you don't completely call me a hack, but you know, don't be shy. I do very much want to hear opinions, good, bad, or otherwise.
Yeah, I mean, we never want it to be personal, like we always say. Nobody sets out to make a bad comic. But if you have legitimate, you know, if there's not every comic is for every person. So if you have something about it that you didn't like, you know, you should be able to articulate that. And I feel like when people say that, oh, that comic's trash, and I say why, and they can't tell me, and they start talking about the creator, I'm like, okay, so it's not the comic you don't like, it's the creator. And usually it's, you know, a personal reason, they're jealous or, you know, whatever. So it's always about the work. You know, we say story first, story matters, character matters. You know, maybe it's the art you don't like. Yeah, you should have a reason. The other thing that's cool is I did see some creators giving you some props saying, hey, you know, I think Brian Edward Hill was saying something about, like, for a first comic, are you sure this is your first comic? Like, he was really impressed, right?
Mm, yeah. No, Brian was. I mean, you know, I don't. You know, he's so busy now. He's doing like big Hollywood stuff. He's doing some really great creator-owned comic book stuff coming out, which you should all go check out. The guy's an incredible, big influence of mine. Yeah, he was kind enough to actually back the first issue of the project, and he had just received it, and you know, was kind enough to say something positive about it on Twitter. And it's hard to describe it. I was elated, you know, to see that somebody that influenced me, that influenced the way that I write and the way that I think I'm learning to carry myself as a creator, you know, has taken to something that I've created. So it's unreal.
Yeah, I mean, that's another reason, too, to get back to talking about conventions. you know, so many times people are like, well, how do I break in? How do I, you know, I want to write comics. And if you want to write comics, then write comics. Trevor's doing it. He's sitting right here, proof that it can be done. Mm-hmm. When you do get a chance to get out to conventions, to network, not only with other creators, but to editors, and you can walk up to an editor and go, here it is, you know, like, let me show you, you know, mm-hmm. rather than just, oh, let me pitch you an idea or whatever. Look, here's my money where my mouth is. You know, I ran these campaigns. I fulfilled them. I, you know, met the deadlines that needed to be met. Because that's the other part of Kickstarter, right? We all have the nightmare stories of, yeah, I backed this and it was 4 years ago and I'm still waiting for my book. It hasn't showed up. That's not the case with your campaign at all.
Yeah, I mean, even then, I mean, I definitely had my struggles, like logistically, just never having done this before. Everything was so new. It didn't help that I had COVID. I caught COVID, so I had to go hole up for close to a month before I could return to civilization in any capacity. But yeah, it was difficult. You know, there was so much that as a 23-year-old that's maybe shipped like 12 things from eBay, you know, over the course of my life, to have to ship, you know, 100 packages of varying sizes, weights to you know, various states, various other countries. I mean, it's, you know, I'd never shipped an international package before. And here I am shipping like 15 between Japan, Italy, the UK, Australia, you know, Brazil, like Spain. There was a lot to learn and I totally fall on my sword for that. And it slowed me down a little bit, but you know, it's kind of, and kind of going back to what you're saying about conventions, not having the opportunity to approach the people one-on-one that have done this before, that have that experience. You know, I kind of went in blind without that advice. And there are some that are super gracious and very open online, and others that aren't so much. And sometimes for very good reasons, you know, people on the internet can be hostile and rude. And sometimes you just kind of want to ensure that doesn't happen overall, so you don't really open the gates. So it was unfortunate not having access to, you know, my sort of elders, I suppose, my, you know, my predecessors, and to kind of pick their brains about things like that. But it's a whole different beast.
Yeah, why don't you talk to us about the second campaign here? So just to let everybody know, as we're recording this, Trevor's raised $3,817 of his $6,800 goal. So a little over halfway there in only 2 days. So you're on a faster pace this time, which I'm sure feels good, but at the same time, you know, there's always that worry until it actually gets funded. So what are some of the tiers? What's available? And if somebody missed out on the first issue, what's available for them? Because I think there's, and correct me if I'm wrong, there's, they can still get the first issue through this campaign as well, right?
Absolutely. So there are multiple opportunities for you to grab the first issue, no matter what tier you're on. If you don't see the first issue as a reward in whatever sort of tier you are kind of presupposing to contribute to, there's actually an add-on menu with directions as to how to add copies of the first issue. And what I've offered to Kickstarter backers are free signatures on the books. So that has been a consistent thing since issue one, you know, for the book that is being funded through the campaign. Well, I'm actually offering this to you for issue one on the second Kickstarter's campaign as well. And there are a lot of really, really cool rewards that I try to offer up. You know, Jason and another peer of mine have always kind of said, you could probably charge more. And I'm like, no, I do not want to do that. I think comic book readers are constantly abused by publishers and big companies. And, you know, I want to earn their trust before I can make asks of them. I want to make a great product, both in terms of the physical conception and the sort of personal conception that you get from reading the material and engaging with it. So, you know, a single copy signed of issue 2, 24, premium, thick stock, 24 pages, I'm sorry, a premium thick stock with no ads is $5. It's a $5 book. Now, where that might not sound as enticing, when you buy a 24-page book from perhaps a big two publisher, not only are the pages literally half the size, not only is the cover literally half the size and half the thickness, four of those 24 pages are ads. So you're getting a more whole experience here. And there are a lot of really cool rewards for you to get both covers of issue two, both covers of issue one, really cool art prints. And the art will be decided on by the backers. About 2 weeks from now, I will release a poll for all of the backers to vote on what art they want for their print, because I feel like I want to make this an experience that everybody feels in touch with. I had literally put out a poll for the people that backed issue one to help me decide what the shirt design was going to be for issue two. And now we have two available pieces of merchandise for shirts. And even with apparel, merchandise, shirts, sweaters, whatever, they're all high quality. I don't want somebody to pick up a Helix Project shirt and go, ah, it's just kind of cool because it's a memento of this little comic book I backed. I want it to be wearable. I want it to be comfortable. I want it to look cool. Yeah. You know? So if you guys scroll down, you know, take a look at them. I know Jace, you know, was kind enough to pick up a shirt from the last one. And, you know, I've recorded with him at least once a week for the last like month and a half, maybe even 2 months, just between his stuff, my stuff, whatever. And I've seen him wear it like two or three times.
Yeah. I love that. I was just thinking, man, I should have worn it. And I'm like, remember, it's in the laundry because I wore it 2 days ago. Yeah. It's one of my favorite shirts, super comfortable. And so in the interest of full disclosure, I already backed because I wanted to get in on the first day, first 2 days, first 48 hours are so important for campaigns. But I think I might get a sweatshirt this time. So I may have to go back in and adjust my pledge because I love sweatshirts. But then the other part of me goes, well, I live in Arizona. When will I ever wear it? So
yeah,
I haven't decided. But yeah, I agree. You've got a lot of great stuff on here between stickers, you know, like Beyond the Book. You have stickers, you have, you know, the t-shirts, the sweatshirts. And then you have a couple of kind of pie in the sky. I mean, I did see that somebody already picked up the Get Drawn into a Flashback Crime Scene for $500, which is amazing. But there's still another chance to get drawn in the book. And you also have an ultimate Helix experience, which sounds pretty cool as well.
Yeah. So primarily, I want to talk about the one of one getting drawn in as a murder victim, because honestly, out of all the tiers, I do think that's the coolest one. You get featured on two pages. One of them is a splash page, and I have the splash page featured on the Kickstarter, where you literally get murdered by the main antagonist of the series. And I am almost most proud of those two pages in this story, because it has almost no writing, and I think it is bone chilling what is being done with camera by Marcello, and the vibrant colors by Marcio. I mean, like they killed it. Like I could literally just show them off for 2 minutes and make a blood curdling murder scene that will chill your bones, and you get the opportunity to get drawn into that scene. I think it's super rad. And aside from that, you get everything from pretty much all the previous tiers. You will get credited as an executive producer of my book, like printed inside the book. You'll get a rad producer sweater customized that will never, ever be released again. And honestly, out of all my merchandise I've ever designed between Dark Knight Nation, Helix Project, Pocket Watch Press, I think that is the dopest thing I have ever made, that sweater.
Yeah, pretty cool.
Yeah, dude, you get stickers, there's so much in there. So definitely go check that out. I mean, it also includes a really cool commissioned art piece by my artist Marcello, who has been such a shining point of this book. You know, one of the most common sort of accolades that the first issue received were comments on the art, and rightfully so. Marcello is awesome. Marcio just takes what he's doing and bumps it up to 15. You know, out of 10, I'm so proud of that. And I love to be able to feature their work on the merchandise because it is so eye-catching. And the producer sweater in question is actually features the black and white raw art from the variant cover artist, who people have been going nuts for. I mean, the variant cover for issue one moves like crazy. You know, so and he's so good, and little spoilers that if you guys do end up liking his variant cover work, he will be doing interior art for me on a, on an upcoming project that I can't say anything about because it is relatively in the distance, but oh man, is it going to be great. So, you know, I encourage you guys to peek around. I mean, it's hard for me to kind of talk about this stuff because different things are going to appeal to different people, but I really tried to give you guys as much bang for your buck as I possibly could while still being able to draw a little bit of profit and putting that away towards making issue 3. The whole goal of these campaigns are to get as much in as I possibly can so that I can make the art and physical production of these books quicker and quicker and quicker. You know, if I had things my way, I would love to release an issue every 2 months and hopefully even get quicker. If things continue to get bigger, I would like to, instead of doing an issue 6, just do a double-sized issue 5 and let you guys have your story and enjoy it in a much more digestible bite. So that's very much a goal of mine. And, you know, as Jay said, there's a super cool package that is a little bit of a shot in the dark, but I wanted to make it, you know, I wanted to offer it to somebody, especially seeing how the world seems like it's beginning to get back on its axis, knock on wood. I don't want to jinx it, which includes me flying you out to New York City for a full day and a full night of whatever you want, you know, and I will cover the as long as you are in North America. So the continental United States, Canada, I will fly you into New York, set you up in an Airbnb. We will hang out, go have breakfast, lunch, dinner, and a drink if you are 21 or over. If not, we can find something else to do. So I don't want to discourage anybody. But we will do literally anything. I will show you to all around all of my favorite comic book and geeky analogous spots in New York City because there are a plenty. We'll go to the famous Midtown Comics, the famous Forbidden Planet Comics, which – full disclaimer, Forbidden Planet might be like my favorite comic book shop in New York. There's a bar in Brooklyn. It's literally a comic book bar. So there's so much to do. And you literally get pretty much everything on this Kickstarter campaign and in excess. And I and all of your stuff will be hand delivered by me during this sort of session. So it's hard for me to speak it up because I can't, you know, I can't promise that I'm the most exciting person in the world, but, you know, I think it'd be a really great time. You can ask me whatever questions you want. And if you are an aspiring creator, you know, it's a good opportunity for me to, you know, maybe give you my advice. You know, if you want an editorial critique, I do sort of freelance edit comics, prose, screenplays on the side. So I'm more than happy to do that. It includes a $150 shopping spree at my local comic book store, amongst so many other things. So consider giving it a look.
Yeah, definitely sounds like a good time. So, all right. Well, best of luck on the campaign, Trevor. Really excited for you. I'm happy to see that issue 2 is already in the works. Can't wait to get my hands on it. As we're wrapping up here, why don't you remind everybody where they can find you online and anything else you want to let our listeners know as we're closing up here.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Well, thanks again. I appreciate you having me on and letting me talk about the book a little bit. I am surprisingly horrible talking about my book, considering I used to be a salesperson. It's so much more uncomfortable when it's so kind of close to the chest. But you can find me on Twitter at PWatch Press, on Instagram at Pocket Watch Press, if you want any and all updates on what I'm publishing, what I'm doing in that sort of degree. We might have a pretty cool announcement coming out in the next 2 or 3 weeks that would be massive for my printing label. So I hope you guys consider tuning in. If you want to maybe find a reason to convince yourself to read my comic, I actually do sort of comic book analysis discussion on a YouTube channel called Dark Knight Nation. And I think that if anything, it'll tell you that I care about comics. I love comics. I want them to be good. And I am actively learning lessons from people that are in the industry that have names for themselves and doing my best to integrate that into what I'm writing and making it my own. So, you know, I'm really bad at like talking myself up, but I really hope you guys consider giving it a look, man. This artwork that has been coming in for the Helix Project issue 2 is fantastic. I mean, you know, no hyperbole. Marcelo, Marcio have been absolutely destroying it on interior art. Adrian has been killing it with the variant cover. And I really am proud of this book. And I think what we've been able to accomplish in producing a highly professional product for you all to read. So consider giving it a look. If financial contribution isn't in the cards for you right now, seriously, sharing it around, giving it exposure is monumentally helpful. So I hope you consider giving it a look, checking it out, maybe sharing it around with some friends. And I thank you for it. And I thank you for giving me the time of the day to listen to me babble a little bit about my funny pages here.
Yeah. And I'll remind everybody, I know some people are still out of work. They might not have the means to contribute, or maybe you just feel like it's not for you. So even if you don't join the campaign, if you're not able to pledge, sharing it on social media, throwing it up on Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, what have you, really helps, because the more exposure, the more people that get a chance to see it, the more people that may get a chance to pledge and become part of the campaign. So I'll put a link to the campaign in the show notes. There will be a link to Trevor's YouTube channel and his Twitter and social media in the show notes as well. So if you're having trouble finding him, you can go and click there and find it. So again, Trevor, thanks for joining us and talking a little bit about the campaign, and best of luck. Hopefully it funds quickly, stays on the same pace, and you can even hit some stretch goals.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. Thank you for your support. Thank you for giving me the time of day. And I thank you to everybody for simply listening. You guys got to stay on lock with the Comic Source Podcast, man. This guy is one of the best out there, and he continues to get better and better. I was just listening to his killer interview with Liam Sharp, who is an acquaintance of both of ours. And, you know, it's you're not going to get this anywhere else. So whether you back my Kickstarter or not, you know, make sure you follow Jason, the Comic Source, on everywhere podcasts are available. Otherwise, you're making a mistake. So,
all right. Appreciate you saying that. So thanks, everybody, for your time. Thanks for listening, as always. And we'll talk to you next time.
You can find the Comic Source Podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whichever podcasting app you prefer. Please tell all your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us. The readings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, be sure to visit us at lrmonline.com to join the conversation, access the show notes, and discover all our other great pop culture content. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.